This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. And we are joined by Rose Braz, an attorney from San Francisco. Rose, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that you were able to be with us on short notice. Christian Parenti gave me your email, and I was really glad that I was able to contact you so we could talk about the protest in Seattle. I was up there for the week, as well as many thousands of other people. And certainly there has been now this whole issue and this whole focus on what took place in part of the protest, and that was the attack against corporate property. And that's why we have you on the line, because Christian said that you would be able to speak to that. Let's start off with an overview, if we will. Why are you interested in this topic?
Well, I went to Seattle to protest the WTO, and so I was there, and I'm a longtime activist, and you know, these issues of what is proper protester behavior and what is not recur. You know, this is not the first time, nor will it be the last, where we discuss you know, what lengths should protesters go to further their beliefs and opinions and out to the public, getting that message out to the public.
Certainly, you're right. This isn't the first time that this has happened and will not be the last. And there are a lot of, you know, contradictions within the movement, if we want to call it the anti-WTO movement, just for ease of discussion. I mean, there have been a lot of discussions and debates and distancings and recriminations back and forth regarding what we had, which was basically, as I understand it, a relatively small group of people who call themselves anarchists, who decided apparently to target some of the corporate-owned stores in downtown Seattle, as I understand it, doing about $2.5 million damage. Does that sound like a place to start for you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think there's some important points to be made. One is that there was not a window broken in downtown Seattle until the police started shooting tear gas and rubber bullets at the demonstrators. And to me, it just became, you know, abundantly clear that from that point on, the whole quote-unquote rules of engagement were, you know, altered, not by the demonstrators, but by the police.
Well, it seems to me, I mean, certainly, and certainly I was there as well, that what we had up until that time were thousands of demonstrators, some in the streets, many of them linked arm in arm, blocking delegates getting into or out of some of the hotels and the convention center. I mean, it seems to me, while I'm generally sympathetic with the protesters and find myself in a somewhat uncomfortable position to be being devil's advocate for the police, it seems to me somewhat naive to think that the police were just going to allow this to continue to go on all day.
Well, I think it was very naive of the police to not have the delegates inside the Sheraton prior to approximately 8 or 8:30 when the you know, human chain around the site really took force. And I thought it was naive of the police not to have an alternative route for those delegates to get into the Sheraton. I think that they had to have known that, you know, thousands upon thousands of people were going to be descending on that site, most of them associated with something called the Direct Action Network. I mean, they, you know, the protesters have said for months their plan was to nonviolently encircle the WTO and not allow it to go forward. And so I think that, to me, that to me was a grave police error. Now, was it naive to assume that they were going to allow that to, you know, continue, the blockade to continue? I think there were several different alternatives they could have taken besides tear gassing and shooting rubber bullets at people. I've been in numerous, you know, blockades where police have, you know, it's a lesser form of force in my opinion, but you know, used wedges, for example, to wedge through the crowd and opening was something that was not even attempted as far as I saw. You know, helicopter those delegates in, something, you know, there certainly wasn't a need for them to go to the lengths they went to, I believe, in terms of the tear gas, rubber bullets, et cetera. I mean, I think that's unprecedented to have the use of tear gas and rubber bullets on the streets of the U.S. For quite some time.
We're talking with Rose Braz, an attorney from San Francisco, and we are talking about the protests which took place in Seattle, Washington during the WTO ministerial. Rose, let me ask you, you brought up the Direct Action Network. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, I wasn't involved with the Direct Action Network, but I did visit their site in Seattle, and these are folks who had been up in Seattle for months on end, training activists nonviolence, direct action, meaning, you know, putting your body between the forces that be and stopping the WTO from going forward. So they had been up there for months planning this action and were organized in affinity groups and individuals and various banner hangings, creative, you know, puppeting, and all sorts of different ways of defining what direct action is. But they've been preparing for this date for months, and they had quite a site up there in Seattle, a warehouse full of meeting places, folks from all over the world, literally, were trained and spent time there deciding by consensus what was going to happen.
Yeah, as best as I understand it, for the most part, because I agree with you. I think the police showed themselves to be woefully unprepared, despite the fact that, as I understand it, they had been in communication with the Direct Action Network and other groups and organizations of protesters for months as well. I mean, it wasn't like they didn't know what was going to be happening, or at least have some sort of idea. So I agree with you. I think the police approached this from, I'm not quite sure what their thinking was. I mean, they knew that this was going to happen. I mean, the reason I went there is because I knew that this was going to happen. And certainly they seem to have blown it completely.
Well, I'm sure you heard the news today that Seattle's police chief resigned, and
yes.
I think that's really an admission that they blew it.
Right. I certainly agree with you. There's no question that they blew it. We're talking with Rose Braz, an attorney from San Francisco. We're talking about the protests in Seattle. Rose, let's talk, if we will, about the issue of what is protest and perhaps what's not, what is effective and what's not. I mean, there seems to be a certain mentality that if you're quote-unquote nonviolent, that's okay, and then if you break property, that is no longer legitimate protest, at least in some circles that is being said. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I think we really need to differentiate between what is, we need to define what is violence and what is vandalism. To me personally, violence is not a broken window at the Gap. It's vandalism. It's against the law. If you do it, you're going to face some penalty for that in our criminal justice system, and you need to be cognizant of that. But to me personally, that is not violence. Violence, you know, is the fact that, you know, a little girl in Haiti gets paid 11 cents a day to manufacture Pocahontas pajamas for Disney that are sold for $22. So, you know, I think that we really need to define that, and that's one issue. The other issue is, you know, what's effective and what's not, and I certainly don't always agree that property destruction is an appropriate means of protest. On the other hand, you know, you look back at the Boston Tea Party, for example. That was a form of property destruction, direct action. You look at the plowshares actions of folks going in and destroying nuclear armaments. Directly, that's vandalism. That's destruction of property. I think that the other thing that was significant about Seattle was, you know, the vandalism that did take place was incredibly well targeted. I mean, this was a protest about global capitalism, and corporations like the Gap, like Nike, you know, were right there, and those were the businesses that were targeted. Amazingly enough, the small mom and pop businesses emerged unscathed from this. In fact, several stayed open. I saw one place, a little drugstore, that continued to sell drinks and film to folks. A small coffee shop stayed open. So I thought that that was also significant, because I think oftentimes when folks, you know, do resort to property damage, which is definitely an escalation, you know, of tactics, that it's not always so well thought out, let's put it. You have folks who, you know, indiscriminately demonstrate their anger without really thinking too clearly. But in this case, I would have to say, at least from what I saw, that that was not the case, that it was extremely well targeted. And, you know, know, and it was effective, even though I think people, like, a lot of times will say, you know, it's never, ever called for. I think people are going to be hard-pressed to deny that the publicity and the media attention that came out of this protest was due, at least in some large part, not totally, but in some large part, to the fact that people, you know, there was this property destruction. I think people are hard-pressed to deny that. They can disagree with it, they can denounce it, but I don't think that they can deny that it played a role in the sweeping media attention to the WTO.
Well, and I think you're right in that fact that certainly the protest as a whole, and of course in particular the issue of the property destruction, has helped put even more of a spotlight on Seattle and therefore the WTO, and people now who never heard of the World Trade Organization are indeed saying, well, what is this all about? I too went through downtown when I was up there looking, and have to agree with you that it certainly does appear that for the most part it was stores like The Gap and Nike Town and things like that that were targeted, because you would see a whole row of broken windows and then one small one skipped over and then a whole row of broken windows again. Though I think we do have to admit that at least in the case of the Radio Shack, which may have been a totally separate group of people, that there was indeed what appeared to be just straight out looting there, which I think is a different, you know, obviously a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see... You know, obviously none of us could have seen what happened everywhere.
Right, that's right.
And, you know, there's no doubt, as I said, that at times, all vandalism, property damage, whatever, has not been incredibly well thought out. I just think that nobody can be everywhere at every moment. But what I saw, at least, was incredibly well targeted, and I have no doubt that there were folks there just to loot. But I also have no doubt there that there were folks there who strategically seem to be targeting the prime offenders of the prime benefiters of global capitalism that the people in the streets were there to protest against.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, in looking at the damage patterns, I mean, I have to agree that there certainly was some of that. I mean, I also did see, you know, young people on Tuesday night in the streets just simply drinking and looking to, you know, do further kinds of defacement and things like that. So, I mean, I think there were several, you know, different things going on, and of course, no one could be everywhere. We're talking with Rose Braz. We're talking about the protest in Seattle. This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. Rose, let's, if we can, talk about tactics, if we will, because while I don't necessarily disagree with the premise of forcing corporations to pay a real physical price, a real physical manifestation of protest, such as what happened. What I have a problem with is that I think that conducting it within the context of the other protest, I think was a mistake, in my opinion. I think if this was going to be done, it should have been done at a different time where it was clear, where it was separate, and then some sort of communique was released afterwards saying, this is why we did it, this is why it happened, and that it was a very clear thing, not in the midst of all of this other stuff going on. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I guess I believe that, you know, within the scope of almost any demonstration, there are people, you know, you have a demonstration, some people come and walk on the sidewalk, some people walk in the streets, some people block an intersection, some people sit down and risk arrest, some people go cooperatively to the bus or the van, you know, when they're arrested, other people go limp. I think it's a rare occasion when you have, it's a rare occasion and it's a small demonstration when you have a complete unity of tactical decision making, you know, when everybody's on exactly the same page.
Right.
I think those situations certainly occur, and they're powerful situations, but I think in the context of the WTO situation, that just could never happen. I think you had, you know, upwards of 50 to 100,000 people there. I really don't know how many people were there,
right.
But you had people, you know, in all sorts of, you know, you had the labor folks who had a, you know, rally over at this near the Space Needle, who marched to the direct action site. You had the direct action folks, you know, who were in front of the light linking arms. You had people in the streets who were locked down to property, you know, to whatever things in the middle of the intersections to block traffic. So I think that, you know, there are some basic principles, which to me are like, you know, nobody gets physically hurt, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I think it's a hard-pressed thing to control the actions of all folks. And I think generally, you know, with some caveats being, you know, no physical harm to anybody, that we have to respect the fact that different demonstrators take on different tactics. And we have to recognize also that the role of the quote-unquote extremists play in legitimizing the folks who, you know, are there negotiating with the police, who are there sweeping up the glass the next day. And I think that those folks are, you saw just by Thursday, Clinton was offering to meet with the good demonstrators.
Right.
Clinton was making speeches about the good demonstrators. He condemned the violence, but he, you know, supported the people in the streets who were the good demonstrators, who came here peacefully, blah, blah, blah. So I think that those folks need to at least acknowledge the role of the so-called extremist in, you know, facilitating their power.
Well, it's interesting because I think back to many, many years ago, and I think back to a statement I'm obviously paraphrasing, made by Malcolm X, where he said, you know, that lots of at that time, white America said, well, we better do business with Martin Luther King because the alternative is me. And
exactly.
And I'm hearing really you say almost the same thing, correct?
Correct, yeah. And you saw it taking place. It wasn't just, you know, that's what Clinton said. That's what, you know, that's what occurred, so...
Let me ask you this, because now the question comes to mind. Is the action of the protesters, what we'll say, if we want to call them the extremists or the anarchists or whatever, so much of the focus has gone to that. Has it actually, in some respects, hurt the cause of shining light on the WTO and addressing the issues of how are we going to do something about this whole thing of world trade and make it be something that works for more people? Because so much of the, at least much of the media energy is now focusing on this whole issue of the destruction.
Well, I think that, I mean, if you look at history, when issues are not on the map of the world agenda, it often takes a dramatic action to get them on the map. And I think what happened in Seattle was certainly that, a dramatic action that has gotten the WTO on the map. I think that as time goes by and something's already known, it may not be the most productive thing to do extreme actions. But I think in this case, the WTO was not known. People didn't know before last week even what it was. Now, at a minimum, you know, people have an understanding, a minimal understanding of what the WTO is, and what it's doing, and that a lot of people are really angry about it. Do people have an in-depth understanding of the WTO? No, I don't believe that. But I believe that in certain situations, an extreme action can shed some light on something where there was none before. And I think that's what happened in Seattle. Now, can I tell you that if windows, if the gap had not been broken, would this have gotten, would people know so much about, would people know more about the WTO in depth? I really sort of doubt it. I don't think the media, you know, is going to be examining these issues regardless.
So what I'm hearing you say is, I mean, well, let me see if I can, because I just want to get this straight if I can. Had the protest taken place without the direct action attack at the property, do you think it wouldn't have been as effective?
I think it would not have been as effective in bringing world attention to the WTO. Yeah, I do believe that.
We're talking with Rose Braz, an attorney from San Francisco, and we're talking about the protests in Seattle and the WTO. and what all of this means. It seems to me, Rose, that there's going to have to be, and I think you said some of this in one of your statements, that there's going to have to be some form of negotiation, if not reconciliation, in the forces that oppose things like the WTO, because if there remains some sort of sustained protest against that, I mean, the WTO may have packed up in Seattle and went away back to Geneva, but that doesn't mean that they're going to quit doing what they've been doing. I mean, they may lick their wounds for a while, but they're not going to give up. So that means that in order to keep the pressure on, there will have to be more protest, which means that the potential of this kind of event happening within a protest is very likely to take place again. So it seems that there's going to have to be some form of reconciliation of all of these different forces. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do think that, first of all, I'm not sure about the potential for this type of action again. I mean, I think that the action in Seattle was, you know, a culmination of years of organizing and a very peculiar place and time that allowed for such enormous response. And I'm not sure how often that's going to be replicated. But I also do agree that the forces that be need to, on our side, need to have some sort of reconciliation. I think that it's fine to say I really vehemently disagree with the breaking of windows, and it's fine for the window breakers to say I vehemently disagree with those of you who are negotiating with the police. I think those things are all fine. But what I think is where some people have gone over the line is in calling for the arrests of demonstrators and calling for the prosecution of demonstrators. There, you know, quotes filled the papers last week of quote-unquote good protesters, you know, saying, where were the police? Why didn't they arrest these people? We had to protect Nike Town, you know. Why did I have to do this? The police should have been there arresting these people. And I think that, you know, I think that in this day and age, we have to recognize that calling for the arrests of our comrades and potentially severe penalties could be inflicted upon folks for what happened in Seattle, that this is not just, you know, that calling for the arrest of our comrades is not a wise move. It's fine to disagree with them. It's fine to try to talk them out of it. It's fine to negotiate with them about it. It's fine to obviously not do what they do. But calling for their arrest and prosecution is an extreme reaction that is very, very dangerous. And I would really think that that needs to be put to bed. Happen.
What is it going to take to have some sort of unification of these different forces? I mean, how does that play? I guess, you know, I'm thinking, and I don't want to broad brush everybody, but, you know, I'm thinking of terms of criticisms of the so-called left that I have heard and lived with all my life. That, I mean, gosh, I mean, people will argue over the punctuation of a word forever and never forgive somebody because they weren't, you know, politically aligned perfectly. What's it going to take for these disparate groups to try and reconcile and say, you know, we're going to all agree to disagree, but we're all going to agree to at least not overly criticize or sabotage each other? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. And I guess, you know, I don't think we're going to have unification of forces on the left. I don't even think we need that. But I guess I feel like we need some just basic level of respect, a basic understanding of who the enemy is, you know, and a basic goal of not, feeding into the enemy's line of oppression. Arrest, prosecution, you know, denouncing, all of those things are not productive. It's, as I said, it's fine to say I disagree with those actions. And, you know, I've certainly said those things in the past myself, you know, but it's another thing to call for arrest and prosecution of people who are out on the streets demonstrating with you.
We've been speaking with Rose Browns about the protests, and Rose is a lawyer from San Francisco who joined us today on very short notice. First, let me say thank you for that. Also, let me ask you to get your thoughts about where do we go from here with all of this?
Well, I think that a couple of things. One is the key is going to be to continue the pressure on the WTO. Last week on Saturday, a WTO deputy minister visited San Francisco, and he was met by about 300 folks out in front of the building he was meeting in. And so that type of continual presence of folks. We can't let it just stop in Seattle. We have to monitor and follow these folks where they go and continue to voice our opinion about the WTO and its policies and practices. And the other thing I think we need to do is to look at some sort of unifying discussion or dialogue between forces on the left. I think that one of the most powerful things in Seattle was the broad spectrum of people on the left who came out against the WTO. You had farmers, teamsters, steelworkers, environmentalists, anarchists, you know, school teachers, just a really broad spectrum of folks out there, and I think that that is our power. So I think those things can further our movement.
Well, it certainly seems that some form of summit meeting of some nature probably needs to take place if there's going to be a continued effective pressure on the WTO, and that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yes.
Rose Braz, thank you for joining us from San Francisco today. I really appreciate that you were able to be with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.